Picture the scene. It's a beautiful early summer's day. You're riding your bike along a country lane. The sun is warm on your back. Overhead, the birds are singing, and the road verges are a riot of wild flowers. It's the very picture of serenity, and you take it all in with not a care in the world. Until, all of a sudden, you round a bend and are face to face with a big tractor coming the other way. The tractor has a giant mower arm that it's dragging along the verge, cutting down everything in its path, and leaving nothing behind but stubble. Welcome to The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. This week on the show, we're going to be hearing more about enjoying the delights of nature while out riding. First, the subject is roadside verges. According to the charity Plant Life, verges are important havens not just for wild flowers, but for all kinds of wildlife as well. With me down the line is Andy Byfield, Landscape Conservation Manager at Plant Life. So, Andy, why are roadside verges so good for wild plants?
What's happened, Jack, is quite simply this. If you cycle around the countryside today and you look in all the fields around us at present, they're just green. They look gorgeous. They're what we associate with the great British countryside. But when you look at them closely, they've got very, very few wildflowers because 100 years of agriculture, of farming, has wiped the flowers away with herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers. And of course, as the flowers have gone, so have all the insects gone. So that dire situation really makes our road verges all the more important, because on the verges we have these narrow ribbons of colour. We've still got the wildflowers growing in many, many places. And in fact, of our flora of about 1,500 wild plant species, wild native plant species in Britain, something like 2/3 of them are found somewhere or other on Britain's road verges.
So this is really a question of wildflowers being kicked out of everywhere else, and this is the only place where that they're left to mind their own business, because nobody's pouring herbicide on them apart from when the mower comes around.
You know, if you wound the clock back 100 years or 200 years perhaps, the countryside was full of meadows that by chance were not agriculturally improved, so they were just stuffed with lovely wildflowers and lots of insects. Those have all disappeared, and what we've got on verges today in Britain is about 250,000 hectares of potential wildlife habitat. And I don't know whether you were involved at all in the potential sale of the public forest estate, or you listened to that debate, but the verge area in Britain is about the same as the public forest estate managed by Forest Enterprise in England. So it's a huge resource if we get the management right.
And so where are these roadside verges? They're on motorways, they're on main roads, are they on country lanes as well?
You get good ones on the smallest roads all the way through to the biggest roads. And some of the big roads, I shouldn't be saying this, but some of the motorways verges are often the best because they're so large, they're actually almost separate. They're a world apart from the agricultural landscape, so they're not suffering from these problems of pesticides and fertilizers. And, you know, you can go up the M4 or the M5 and see sheets of cowslips and primroses. I know of a place where quite a lot of lizard orchids grow, Dyer's greenweed, so on and so forth.
So what else can we see in our roadsides? I mean, what should people be looking out for, particularly at this time of year?
Well, it depends where you live. So where I live down in Devon, some of the special plants, well, some of the common plants are red campions and bluebells and stitchwort, as you've said. But I'd also be looking out for things like the rare bastard balm. But if I was in Brecon,
how would you spot the rare bastard balm?
You just cycle slowly.
What does it look like?
It's like a dead nettle, but it's a rather grand thing, about a foot high, and it's got large white flowers with a big pink lip. So it is a beautiful thing. You can buy it in garden centres to grow in your garden because it's that beautiful. But it's a speciality of Devon and Cornwall. But you might then go to, say, on a holiday, say, through the Yorkshire Dales, or be lucky enough to live there. And there you might still see things like the globe flower, the melancholy thistle, the wood cranesbill, and these are special things that used to be very widespread in the upland dales hay meadows, but now really only occur on the road verges in many areas up there.
And what do we see on kind of chalk downland? Because that has its own habitat as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you could be cycling around. Well, take, for example, the Cotswolds. It's another limestone, and you still see really nice verges in the Cotswolds with pyramidal orchids and bee orchids. And you can see these wide droves that were left at the time of parliamentary enclosure, which still have masses of meadow cranes bills. But these things are only there as long as we manage these verges in a sympathetic way.
And so what does that require? What should the people, the highways agencies, the local authorities whose responsibility these verges are, what should they be doing? And what are they doing that's wrong right now?
What many of them are doing is actually right, which is cutting them, which these things need. They need the vegetation removing at some stage to keep down the coarse things. But it's the timing that's critical. So what Plant Life is really after is for councils to sign up to what we're calling the Alan Challenge. This is Alan Titchmarsh's challenge to get councils to mow their verges, but not to mow them between April and the end of July. In other words, we want plants to grow. We want them to flower so that you and I can enjoy them. We want them then to seed so that they then can reproduce and produce more gorgeous orchids or whatever. And only then do we want the mowers to go out to flatten everything. We're happy with the flattening. We're just unhappy with the early cutting that goes on at this time of year and really takes all these things out in their prime. And, of course, deprives so many insects of the important nectar and pollen sources.
Yeah, because it's not just us enjoying the look of these things. They do play an important part in the wider ecosystem.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they play an important part. We've heard about how bees are declining, how other pollinating insects are declining. But what verges do is to provide that valuable habitat, but also because they're going from A to B to C to D, they're ribbons across the countryside, they're fabulous resources for insects to fly along or seeds to blow along and to recolonise our very green but rather biologically poor countryside.
What kind of resistance are you encountering from local authorities and the highways agencies? I mean, you're asking them to do less. You know, that would presumably be something that they'd be in favour of.
Well, we're certainly keen on them to do their mowing. All we're saying is please do it in the 8 months when things are not flowering. I think there are a whole host of reasons. There's obviously safety reasons, so that when you come to a motorway junction and you're trying to merge onto the motorway, if you're not on your bicycle, at that point you want to be able to see where you're getting on. So there's clear safety issues with road signs and access onto other roads, junctions and that sort of thing. That's taken as read and accepted. But I think there's just this desire to keep the countryside looking tidy. And I think that a lot of this mowing could be taking place much later in the year if people were happy with a bit more untidy verges through the heart, you know, through the heart of the summer. Then actually the mowing could take place later and it could really reverse the fortunes of a lot of plants and animals that are declining fast.
Now, roadside verges are clearly very valuable for wildlife, as you've explained. But for a lot of us cycling around the countryside, we would like to see a cycle path alongside a main road so that we don't have to be cycling along with articulated lorries passing within feet of us as cyclists. We'd like to see a nice wide track separate from the motor traffic so that we could enjoy cycling along. On many main roads, the verge is wide enough to do that, but clearly that's going to mean tarmacking over these wildflower habitats. Is there enough room for everyone? Would Plant Life be supportive of cycle tracks in roadside verges?
I suspect there's enough room for both. I mean, on the bigger roads, verges can be very, very large. And often, in fact, the bit right next to the road, which is the flat bit, perhaps if there are cuttings and embankments, that bit it often is the most damaged by salt spray and that sort of thing. But I suppose it really would be a discussion because there's so much resource there that's being undermanaged where the wildflowers and the insects and what have you aren't doing their stuff, but could do with the right management. There's so much undermanaged resource that I would have thought a package of getting more managed and having cycle routes might be a good sort of solution for everyone.
And so what are you asking for people to do to support the campaign? What can they do?
The most simple thing is to sign up to the Plant Life Petition, the website petition, because obviously Road Verge is not the easiest of places to botanize on unless you're cycling or in a car. They're not always the easiest place to get out and do a bit of management yourself. You know, there's lots of health and safety issues. But I think what we're saying is that council's already mowing these verges. They're doing the right thing in the sense that they are mowing them. All we're wanting them to do is to push the mowing date later into the year so things flower and seed. And the way we can get the councils to do that, I think, is by getting more people signing the Plant Life campaign on our website. And with that sort of people power behind us, I think a lot of councils are changing their way. And the more we push, the more they'll change.
And for people who want to learn a little bit more about what they're seeing when they look in the hedgerows and look at the verges, you've recently put out a nice A4 cut out and keep guide to I think the top 10 plants that you might see. Any other suggestions for people who want to identify these things? Because I've found that the more I've known about what things are and what I'm looking for, the more pleasure I get when I spot them. Obviously, they look the same to the uninformed eye, but somehow once you are able to appreciate there's actually 10 or 15 species in this small section, for me at least, the fact that I can name them all or attempt to name most of them, it makes it more pleasurable. What resources would you recommend for people to start their botanical learning?
I guess the simple answer is to grab one of the colour wildflower guides, and there are plenty of good wildflower guides in Britain, perhaps better than anywhere else on earth, and choose a nice warm evening and go into a safe road environment, you know, a little lane or whatever. Try and choose a diverse habitat with a bit of grass, a bit of scrub, a bit of woodland perhaps, and particularly if there are cuttings or road banks and that sort of thing, just take your book out, enjoy the sun, enjoy the weather, and enjoy the flowers. And once you get into it, you'll start spotting an ever-increasing range of wildflowers on verges around Britain.
And are there plant life reserves that are good places to go, and do you do events where people can go along and be taken around by an expert?
Jack, if you want to become a member, we would be delighted. We do have about 20-25 reserves across Britain, some small, some very large, and we do have a sort of program of events where people are introduced to some of Britain's loveliest wildflower spots.
Andy Byfield, Landscape Conservation Manager at Plant Life, thanks for joining us. And you can find out more about the campaign at plantlife.org.uk/roadvergecampaign.
he told me to love him and promised to love and to cherish me over all others above. Now my heart is now wandering, no misery can tell. He's left me no warning, no words of farewell.
Now, I don't think anybody, least of all plant life, are actually suggesting it, but if you do nothing to a roadside verge, eventually, if you wait long enough, it'll become a woodland. And woodlands are amazing places to ride bikes, well, particularly mountain bikes, and they're extremely popular with the baggy-trousered mountain bike fraternity. Weeks ago, at the Welsh Cycle Show, I had a chat with Garfield Kennedy of the Woodland Trust. The Woodland Trust manages thousands of acres of woodlands across the United Kingdom, and I asked him how happy he was about mountain bikers storming around the Woodland Trust's woods.
We're pretty friendly with all comers, and I think that the 90% of responsible cyclists using our woods, not a problem. The 10% that aren't so responsible, or maybe 5%, I hope it's not too high, like any group, basically, of any sport or any profession, we welcome those that basically respect nature and actually find the balance between nature and sport. And therefore, at a show like this, you know, let's face it, everybody who cycles, including myself, is interested in the outdoors, not interested in being stuck in front of a television set every day. The Woodland Trust is all to do with out of doors and actually looking after what is actually our most precious habitat. Why is it the most precious? Dead simple. It used to cover 93% of the landmass of Britain or thereabouts. It's now, unfortunately, only our ancient woods, intact ancient woods, number only 2% of our landmass, and that is a very low percentage compared to many European countries. So if anybody likes the out of doors, that includes every single cyclist I've ever met in my life. Let's get these woods back. Let's sort out our flora and fauna and actually live in a world that's worth living in.
So people can obviously ride out to the woods and visit them on foot, but you can also ride your bike through some of your woods, can you?
It really depends. I mean, our woods aren't policed, if that's a good way of putting it. So I think the short answer is, if we actually said no one's allowed in our woods with a bike, we'd just be given short shift for that. We're not trying to stop people doing things. All we ask is that people respect the flora and fauna that's actually in there, because I mean, we're looking after woods for two reasons. Number one, for flora and fauna. Number two, in no particular order, for human beings to use. I mean, we take over woods from the Forestry Commission, which have been turned into a monoculture of spruces. And we don't clear fell them, in other words, create a kind of a desert of kind of stumps. What we do is we will actually work over a period of maybe 20, maybe 30 years and slowly convert the woods back into broadleaf and mixed woodland, thinning and carefully doing that. Often actually using dray horses and zip wires rather than heavy industrial machinery, which of course is a very light footprint on the land. I mean, it's to do with respecting nature.
And so how do you manage the potential conflict between cyclists, some of whom might be going quite fast, the mountain bikers, they do like their adrenaline, and someone who, you know, you've got a picture here of a couple of kids, I'm not sure if they're supposed to be stomping around the bluebells, but how do you manage that different competing uses for recreation?
It's a good question, and it's one where I think that in a wood that's empty with paths and obvious places to go, I think that the real truth is that I think cyclists have got to be respectful of the other users, basically. And I think that applies no matter where you are. We're not different from any other place. It's just let's find a fair balance.
And do you have any specific ways that you do that to slow people down or not spoil their fun exactly, but, you know, just to calm things down, because it must be a challenge.
We are natural woods. We're not parks. We don't put in special barriers. We don't put in special walkways. That does not mean we let the whole thing grow and sort of fall apart. Actually, there are some we do let fall apart, and in some cases. Why? Because you actually can end up with anything up to a 40% increase in species range, because some of the rarer lichens and rotting trees produce, you know, an absolute wealth of in many cases rare species. In the south of the country, we are too tidy. Wales is a little bit less tidy. The far north of the whole of the British Isles is less tidy, and our species range in those parts of the world is actually much greater. I think tidy is an obsession, and we don't do special things. We let it be natural. And in fact, you know, as a cyclist and a mountain biker, you know, I do mountain bike, and I do quite like natural places, not places that are actually prepped ahead of me, basically, you know, because that's just a little bit too tiny for me.
And as a cyclist, what would be a couple of recommendations of your favourite woods for people listening to go and visit on their bikes?
I'm very fond of Hartwood Forest. It's between St Albans and Harpenden in Hertfordshire. And it's a 44-acre wood that was an ancient 44-acre wood. We've turned into an 858-acre new wood, with a lot of help from the locals, and it's got a whole variety of habitats. And I have actually been in there walking. I've been in there with the bicycle. I've been there on open days. Well, they're all open days, but days where we've invited the public in with families, etc., to go around. And it's a joy. It's surrounded by built-up areas nearly. And it's seen by those that use it. I mean, for instance, I bumped into somebody who was telling me it was by far his favourite wood, and he visited it every week. And I said, oh, that's very nice to have that right beside you. And he says, no, actually, I live in Croydon. Takes the train up every week to see it and walk around it. And it just shows you how obsessive people can be in a nice way.
And if people want to find out more about where their local Woodland Trust woods are, presumably you have a website, and people can also join the Trust.
You know, we've got 1,200 woodlands throughout the country, England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. And those 1,200 woodlands are open to everyone. And one of the things I'm very proud of is there wouldn't be a single dot on any of the maps without member support. And we have to remember that. It's a joint enterprise of our members actually fighting to look after those woods. But they are there for every single man, woman and child in the UK. In other words, we have a very egalitarian approach. We had 15 million visits to our woods estimated a couple of years back. We know that roughly 1.5 million of those visits were non-members. They're just as welcome. And the best definition of a trust, you know, Woodland Trust. Trust means held in trust for the nation. It does not have a bracket after it saying held in trust for the nation of those that can afford to support us. It's for everyone, and we're very proud of that. But actually, we want people to support what we do, and people support us, you know, on average, you know, no more, no less than about a fiver a month. But it makes a huge difference to our wildlife, but also it's a joy. It's the cheapest place to take younger children because, you know, go for a picnic. It's much cheaper than the seaside.
That was Garfield Kennedy of the Woodland Trust. Well, if you're a regular listener to the show, you probably know all about my book of cycle rides in southern England, Lost Lanes, 36 Glorious Bike Rides in Southern England. I'm happy to say that sales have been brisk enough in the first year for the publishers, Wild Things Publishing, to give a green light to a second volume in the series, and that will be Lost Lanes, Wales and the Borders. I've been researching that intensively now for the last year or so, and continuing on through this year. But I would love to have your input. If you have favourite bike rides in Wales and the Borders, favourite places, favourite destinations, really great places to stop and have some food, great pubs, cafes, tea rooms, secret places that nobody else knows about, but you'd like to share with the discerning readers of Lost Lanes, all the kinds of things that make for a wonderful bike ride. I'd like to hear all about them. You can get in touch, drop me an email, the email address, bikeshow@resonancefm.com. On Twitter, I'm Jack Thurston. Anything that you think would make for a beautiful bike ride in Wales and the Borders, I would like to hear it. It is some of the most stunning scenery, and in some ways, it's a matter of what you leave out rather than what you include. Anyone who recommends something that I didn't already know about and that makes it into the book will, of course, be recognised and will receive a free copy. Happy to do that. So please get in touch with your top tips for Lost Lanes rides in Wales and the Borders. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. I'll be back again in about a week's time with another show. Until then, goodbye.